Hey, this is Ryan Thomas. Thanks so much for listening to On the Road and supporting Faith Radio. You are just the very best, and we appreciate you so much. Enjoy the show.
Discovering stories of courage, determination, and hope. Welcome to Faith Radio's On the Road. Now, here's Ryan Thomas.
Well, how is this for a biography sketch? Born to a royal family in West Africa, fleeing his homeland for America after seemingly losing it all, falling in with the wrong crowd, becoming something of a tycoon in the New York underworld, then an extraordinary experience of hearing God's call, leaving his old life behind, and setting out on an adventure that would take him from the Navy SEALs to the set of a blockbuster Transformers film and a career in film in amazing ministry. Today we'll meet the gentleman who's been described as a miraculous mountain of a man. Remy Adeleke joins us on the road. His new book, Transformed, traces his journey and shares incredible hope. Welcome to the show, good sir. What a treat to have you here today.
Thank you. It's a blessing. It's a blessing to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely, sir. I mean, man, not many folks can say they were born as legit royalty, sir, but that's exactly the story for you. Can you tell me a little bit about your earliest years in Nigeria?
Yeah, so it kind of starts back with my father. My grandfather was a chief in the Yoruba tribe and in Nigerian culture and other West African culture. Royalty is referred to as chief or your last name. So my last name, Adeleke. Ade means crown. Leke means above. My full name, Ade Remy. Ade means crown. Remy means has appeased me. And so my grandfather was chief at a Bayo Adeleke, and my father was the firstborn son to my grandfather. My grandfather had like nine wives, and my father was the firstborn son of the nine wives. And so my dad was born with that royal title, and he went on to go study engineering and architecture in London, got his master's as well, and then he ended up building this massive enterprise, not just in the West, Europe, London, and in the States, but also in Africa. And so when I came along, I was born into wealth. I was, you know, born with a silver spoon in my mouth, as they say. We traveled the world. We had cars. We had nannies. We had drivers. We had the finest clothes. We ate the finest foods. Like, we didn't want for anything. And unfortunately, in 1987, the Nigerian government stripped my father of his most valuable asset. It's known as the Banana Island. It still exists to this day. It's one of the first man-made islands in the world. And when they took that from him, we went from rich, having absolutely everything, and then my dad died within the middle of him fighting for it, to poor, you know, right after my dad died.
It is an absolutely incredible story. Did the government give any sort of reasoning behind why they seized your father's assets when they did that? Was there any sort of rationale or purpose behind what happened there?
In a nutshell, he fought the Nigerian government for 10 years on a property that he paid 8 million pounds for. Not dollars, pounds. Pounds are more than dollars. So he paid 8 million pounds for this land to develop into the city, and the Nigerian government stripped that from him. And so he went to court for 10 years and fought them. And then finally, they asked him what he wanted, and he asked for this particular area, and the federal government gave it to him. But then years later, after he had developed it into what it was, the Lagos state government came and said that the federal government was not supposed to give you this. And so the state government seized it, which was kind of, it was a bad situation. I mean, corruption was just written all over the situation, because if that was the case, then why didn't the state government come in right when the federal government, why did they wait for my father to develop this massive island before they said, okay, you can't have it now?
My word.
Wow. You know, so that's kind of in a nutshell how it can't happen. And my mom being an American, her and my dad met in the United States, and then she moved to Africa with him after they got married. So my mom being an American, a New Yorker, she was just like, there's no way I'm raising my kids here in Africa. So she moved us permanently to New York City, and I grew up in the Bronx.
You were so young at the time. I mean, is there much at all that you remember about that period? And if so, what are some of those memories?
The memory that sticks with me is we had a nanny, and she spent a lot of time with my brother and I. And so of all the things as it relates to Nigeria, that's she's the one I remember the most.
So your mom brings you to America, as you said, and you write that it really didn't start off well for you in New York City. What was it, would you say, that drove you to get involved with the wrong crowd, so to speak?
To me, I was trying to survive. So that led to different things. It led to stealing and selling drugs and running scams and, you know, a bunch of stuff.
You were on something of a parallel track at this point. I mean, you have this love for music, right? And you're pursuing a business, but then you also start getting deeper, really, into the New York underworld. It started with theft, right? But then kind of really progressed from there.
Yeah. You know, I got involved in selling drugs and then got involved in running like some crazy illegal scams. I won't give it away. You read the book and you'll find out exactly for those who are listening. But yeah, I kind of rose to the top. You know, I was bringing in thousands of dollars a week doing something that I should have never been doing. And it was only by the grace of God that I didn't get caught, because there were people getting caught doing what I was doing and they were going to federal prison. So, you know, I was blessed to be able to escape that. And the reason why I was doing all of that was because I was, as you said, I was really big into hip hop music and hip hop culture. And my dream was to own my own record company. And so that's what I did with the money. I used the money that I made illegally and I kind of funneled it into my record company.
Well, obviously there's legal ramifications to that. But at the same time, reading that part of the story, I couldn't help but think, man, he sure has an entrepreneurial spirit. I mean, you have to admire the creativity.
No, absolutely. It's funny. I'm working on a TV show now about that chapter, that first chapter of my book about that scam. And I was having a conversation with a producing partner yesterday, and I was just like, you know, she's like, what is the heart of this film, this TV show, you know? And I was like, well, you know, it's how a kid who became resourceful, you know, and he used his brain like to do something that, if illegal, and if he used his brain to do something legal, he could have been a millionaire, but he did it the wrong way. So yeah, you know, I think I get it from my dad. My dad, he was always an entrepreneur and businessman, very strategic thinking person. And I think I just naturally inherited that through his DNA. And you know, I used that the wrong way to make money.
Of course. Okay, I'm going to try to pronounce the name one more time. And please feel free to verbally berate me if this is not correct. But Remy Adeleke, was that any better?
That was good enough.
He is a very kind man. He's a speaker, an actor from films like Transformers, The Last Knight, a former Navy SEAL. He's the author of the just-released book, Transformed, A Navy SEAL's Unlikely Journey from the Throne of Africa to the Streets of the Bronx to Defying All the Odds. You did not employ a ghostwriter to write this book, as so many authors do. What was the reasoning behind that?
Well, originally my mom was supposed to be the writer on the book. And after she had written about two chapters, I read those two chapters and I was just like, this is not my voice. It's not my book. It's not my story. It's her voice. It's her story. And so I started pretty much from scratch and, you know, got halfway through. And then, you know, I turned in 14 chapters to the publisher. And they liked it, but they felt like they had this fear that the book that I was going to end up writing was going to end up turning into a 200,000-word book. And I said, hey, what do you mean 200,000-word book? I know I'm going to go back and I'm going to cut stuff. And I'm going to, you know, because that's what I do as a writer. I just need to get everything on paper and then I'll come back and chisel and cut, clean up. Well, they said, well, your contract says you can only turn in 60,000 to 80,000 words. And I was like, wait, what? 60,000 words? Like, I can't tell a story in 60,000 words. I'd have to paraphrase every chapter. And so the publisher said, well, that's what you're contracted for. That's what you have to do. So I went to battle, man. I just fought. And finally they said, okay, you could turn in 130,000 words, but you got to hire a ghostwriter. And so I capitulated. I went and hired a ghostwriter. And then a month later, he turned in the first three chapters, and I read them. And again, it just wasn't me. It wasn't me. It wasn't my voice. It wasn't my story. It was a completely different story from the first half of the book, and that was partly because the guy didn't read the first half of the book. and you know, I ended up, you know, firing him. And there's way more to the story, but I ended up firing him, and which he was okay with, because he was just like, you know, after he finally did read the 14 chapters, he was just like, wow, you're a gifted writer. I don't know why your publisher told me to hire. I told you to hire someone. You need to keep writing this book. No one to tell the story but you.
Wow.
And he was spot on. And I called up my publisher and told him I fired him. And they freaked out. And they was like, we can't believe you did this. You're not going to have a book, blah, 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 blah. And I said, you know, I'm going to do this. It will have a book. I'll get it done. I'll figure it out. And pretty much I sat at the computer until 2:30 in the morning sometimes. And woke up at 6:30 in the morning. And I just wrote, researched, interviewed people, did all the work that I had to do. And I turned in the book. And the publisher was very well pleased with what I wrote.
What an incredible journey. I don't think we think about the process of just what a Herculean undertaking this is to put this story together, but what kind of an out-of-body experience is that to go back and sort of research and retell your own life like that? Is that pretty wild?
Definitely enlightening. You know, when we go through life, you know, in my opinion, we go through life full speed, right? You know, it's just like, you know, got to get to work, do work, got to get to lunch, do lunch, got to get back to work, got to get home to the kids. And, you know, life is just go. And when you're writing a book, it's like your life, the life that you live moves in slow motion. So because it moves in slow motion, you're able to really see things that you never saw, that you didn't realize. Case in point, I didn't realize until I read the whole book after finishing it, how many people came into my life and help give me that extra push to get to where I needed to be. You know, case in point, the recruiter who snuck me into the Navy because I had warrants out for my arrest. You know, my Aunt Doki who gave me money to pay off court fees, court fines, my mom. And there's so many people, you know, throughout this story who just came into my life. And I didn't realize, the majority of them were women, you know, and I didn't realize that until I went back and I wrote and reflected on it. So, It's kind of therapeutic. It makes you feel very great. I mean, it made me feel very grateful, for the bullets I dodged and you know, where I ended up.
Remy Adeleke is a speaker, an actor from films like Transformers, The Last Knight, a former Navy SEAL, and the new book is called Transformed, A Navy SEAL's Unlikely Journey from the Throne of Africa to the Streets of the Bronx to Defying All the Odds. I love that you mentioned your mom in that discussion because she really, in your retelling, kept trying to show you a different side of things right there in New York. She really tries to involve you in the arts, in the possibilities for your life away from the path that you had taken.
She saw the potential in my brother and I. She saw exactly who we could become if we did the work and if we were steered down the right way. She knew the opposite. She knew exactly what we would become if we didn't do the work, if we stayed out in the streets, if we were, you know, disobedient. And you know, and so she really fought hard against the influences in my life to kind of get me to where I am today. You know, so I wouldn't be where I'm at today if it wasn't for her. Even though I did go wayward, there were those lessons that she instilled in me that would always be in the back of my mind. As I did stupid stuff. And that's kind of one of the reasons why I think I eventually got out of the illegal stuff I was doing. It wasn't because somebody told me I needed to. It was because, you know, when we were kids, my mom would discipline us and my mom would, you know, pretty much tell us all the time there's consequences for action. So when I got into that situation, got into a situation with a drug dealer, I sold him some products. The products, you know, went bad earlier than they were supposed to. And he came and threatened my life. That was kind of my proverbial spanking. That was my wake up call. And I knew that, okay, like this horrible thing could have happened to me. I could have been killed. So I need to stop.
That was the moment of decision then.
Yeah, absolutely. That was when I was just like, you know, I'm done with this life. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I'm not going to do this anymore.
So take me inside the chronology of this, because there's this hinge moment of making the decision to leave this life. And then there's also this moment where you literally hear the voice of God. What was the chronology there? Which came first?
I had this wake up call and, you know, with this situation I got into with this drug dealer. And then for 6 months, I did nothing. Absolutely nothing. I just laid around the house and didn't do anything. And then it was in June of 2002, six months later, where, you know, lying in my bed and I heard this voice speak to me. Now, at the time, I didn't think it was the voice of God. I thought it was my subconscious. You know, in retrospect, I truly believe it was the voice of God. But I just felt this presence that was just urging me, you need to get out of here. And then the military was the answer. And, you know, I didn't want to do it because the military was totally contrary to everything I was and everything that I believed in. But I finally, you know, some battling back and forth in my mind, pretty much came to the realization that if I don't turn my life around, if I don't do something else, if I don't leave this place, this environment, I'm going to end up dead or in prison, you know. So, yeah, that's how it all happened.
And up until that moment, you express, you know, trying to explain it away as an act of the subconscious. But until that moment, where were you when it came to the issue of God? I mean, you were not a believer at that point, right?
No, I fluctuated between atheism and agnosticism, depending on the day of the week.
Well, this step that you take to join up the military, and obviously joining one of the most elite portions of the American military and serving for a significant and distinguished amount of time, you faced a significant hurdle that you alluded to before, which is you had two warrants out for your arrest at the time, but you meet this military recruiter that, as you say, saw something in you and just really believed in you, right?
Yeah, my recruiter, yeah, she was from the Bronx, and she knew that no one else would give me a chance. You know, she knew the environment I was in, and she knew that she had the power to you know, shift some things around and get me to where I needed to be. And yeah, she took a huge risk, and you know, it ended up paying off. You know, it ended up paying off.
Man, it sure did. One of the funny parts about you joining up with the Navy SEALs has to be the part that, as you write, growing up, you didn't even know how to swim. What was it specifically that drew you to the SEALs?
What drew me was there was a film I watched earlier that kind of planted the seed. But what really drove me was, you know, I wanted to be part of the best. I just wanted to be part of the best. My mom would preach excellence to my brother and I all the time. Whatever you do, do with excellence. Whatever you do, you know, aim high. And so when I got into the Navy and a SEAL came my boot camp division to put on a presentation about what SEALs do, I was just like, wow, like that's excellence. That's the best of the best. And I want to be a part of that. And that's truly what really drove me in that direction was, you know, I just wanted to be part of the best.
You described the service as just being another portion of your life that really just changed who you were as a person and shaped and honed the person that you were. Obviously, there has to be a lot of pieces to that, but can you express what it was about that service that changed you so deeply?
A lot of things. The SEAL teams really, you know, I told you my mom was all about excellence, but the SEAL teams really, you know, hammered that home for me, you know, because, you know, in SEAL training, you can't just meet the standard. You have to go above and beyond the standard in order to be successful. And I've taken that with me into everything I do now, whether it's writing, you know, whether it's, you know, being a father, whether it's trying to be an actor, whatever it is, I'm not content with the standard. You know, I want to go past the standard. Another thing that the military taught me, was the concept of leadership at every level, and empowering people who you lead, and also, you know, not being being willing to do whatever it is that you command those who are under you to do or have done it. You know, not being a leader who lives and walks in hypocrisy. And so there are so many lessons that the Navy and SEAL teams taught me that have pretty much laid the foundation for all the stuff that I do now.
That's tremendous stuff. You feel a nudge then to leave your military career after over a decade in service. And you felt like you were going to go into ministry at that point and follow that path. But then you get this phone call from Michael Bay's team, right? Calling and saying, hey, we're looking for somebody to be in the new Transformers film. How on earth did that come about?
Yeah, this woman, she got my phone number and from another SEAL and reached out to me. And I was in grad school writing papers at the time. And next thing you know, my phone rings and she's asking me if I would like to be in a movie. And I'm just like, well, I don't have much to do tomorrow, but write papers, sure. And that one day turned into 3 weeks, and that 3 weeks turned into 6 months. And then there I was working on a film for about 6 months. And that's how I got into the acting industry. I was not trying to be an actor. I had no desire to be an actor. I still don't have this passionate desire to be an actor. You know, when the door opens, I walk through it. I have an appreciation for the art. I love the art because, you know, I love acting and I love storytelling. But I'm not like, oh, I need to be an actor or I'm going to die type thing. So, you know, the doors just open and, you know, I just walk through them as they open.
Man, there is courage in that, though. You make it sound like, you know, just a totally natural thing to do. But being able to say yes and follow that nudge, I mean, that takes real courage. Incredible story. It's told in the book, Transformed, a Navy SEAL's unlikely journey from the throne of Africa to the streets of the Bronx to defying all the odds. Mr. Remy Adeleke has joined us today.
Sir.
Did I get any better at saying the name as we went?
You are the man. You are fantastic.
Oh, man, you're a blessing. Thank you so much. Well, sir, for folks who do want to learn more about this incredible story and pick up a copy of the book, where should they begin the voyage online, sir?
You go to Amazon.com, BarnesandNobles.com, BAM, Indie Books. But, I mean, you can't go wrong on Amazon. That's the king of the hill right now.
So just in closing, I mean, this is a tough question, obviously, because it's big. But if somebody is to pick up the book and read the book and just follow this incredible story that seems so unlikely, if there is one thing they take away from your story, what do you hope that might be?
Never let failure define you. Never let failure define your future. When you look at my story, you know, I was very vulnerable and transparent about how I failed over and over again, whether it was failing as a son, whether it was failing as a brother, was failing society by the illegal things that I did, whether it was, you know, failing, you know, a part of Navy training, which I did, whether it was failing at personal relationships with girlfriends and stuff, which I did. You know, the whole book is essentially a book of failure. But one thing that I want people to take away from it is that I never let my failure define my future. Instead, you know, I found the lessons within my failure and use those lessons to help propel me into the future. And so that's what I hope people take away. I hope people will see themselves as they read the book, as though the book is a mirror, and say, you know, man, like I'm just like him. You know, yeah, he's a SEAL, but you know what? He's still a human being, and I'm a human being, and I can connect and relate to him. And, you know, just like he failed, I failed. And if he can fail and keep going, and I can fail and keep going, I don't have to let it define me. So that's what I'm hoping people will get from it.
Yeah. Well, that's pretty inspiring stuff right there. From the book Transformed, a Navy SEAL's unlikely journey from the throne of Africa to the streets of the Bronx to defying all the odds. Remy, what an absolute treat to meet you today, sir. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to talk with us, sir.
All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for sharing in the story of this latest episode of Faith Radio's On the Road. For more on today's conversation and the full podcast archive of all our episodes, look for On the Road when you visit myfaithradio.com. Break the silence and make it a song.
Thank you so much for listening. Programming like this is available through your support, and you can learn more about partnering financially at myfaithradio.com. We'd also love to hang out with you during the week on Facebook and on Twitter. Just search for On the Road with Ryan Thomas. Talk to you again soon.